Welcome to study group three. This study group will be led by none other than Mr. Justin. This study group is on phase and what it is, the properties of phase, how it relates to what we've been learning, and possibly how it relates to, in his field, to sound design. So he might, get into that if he has time. But before we get into that, does anybody have any questions about what we've learned so far? And any cabling questions or anything regarding that. Damien.
I'm trying to catch up on the podcast because obviously I wasn't there on Monday, unfortunately. But I'm like struggling to get my head around the entire sort of physicalities of it, as it were.
The physicalities of what? Sorry.
Could you kind of break it down a little bit?
Well, like for example, all, when we talk about cables, all I see is a wire, and you're talking about all this RS or whatever it is, all the different ends and things.
So in a cable, if you were to take one apart, you would actually see any number of wires and some shielding between each wire so they don't touch each other and short each other out. And the tip, the ring, and the sleeve, in the case of a cable that has a TRS connector, they have three wires or three conductors in the cable to carry audio, voltage, whatever, from, across the whole length of the cable. And so the tip is connected to one of those wires, the ring to another, and the sleeve to the other wire in the cable. And it's all wrapped up and taped up and shielded and so on, so that you just have a nice wire with plug on each end that you hook to stuff.
The simpler way to kind of know, at least for some of your plugs, what you have is just based on how the plug and how the wires feel. So in the case of XLR, and that it's going to be, balanced because you have your three pins. In a three pins scenario with XLR mono, you have your three pins and you have like the cylindrical little barrel shape thing surrounding the three pins on the connector. In cases like that, it's very easy to tell the cable apart. Things like tip ring sleeve and tip ring ring sleeve are a little bit more difficult because, yes, there are two rings and you can physically tell in the connector with your fingernail, but you literally have to use your fingernail to kind of see that, if that makes any sense.
So how are these different configurations important? That's what I don't get, because all this sounds kind of sort of electrics to me, sort of
Okay,
thing.
that's cool. No, it is. But so you have a ground wire that does, well, as advertised. And I found a couple of articles that talk about grounding and its importance and how it works and why you want to have things grounded as much as possible. But as some of you may have figured out, Cavi's email and such has been down for a while, so haven't been able to send that. However, expect those later today. So then that is one of the three wires. And so the other one wire, or two, depending, could carry either, we'll say there's two more for tip ring sleeve, two channels, unbalanced, left and right, or one mono signal, balanced, because it takes two wires to make a balanced signal, third for ground.
The even more simple reason why all of this is important is for people who are thinking about, getting an interface, or, people who are trying to hook up stuff, people who may be possibly looking into running live sound. This is why we teach, cable fundamentals and how, the cabling kind of works, so that people understand on a more fundamental level kind of what goes into setting up these kinds of things. We understand that, not everyone's interested in buying mixers or interfaces. So some of this stuff, may really not be of use to some of you, but will be of use to, some of you as well.
So is it the case of just the certain cables only carry mono and certain carry stereo, that kind of thing?
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Certain cables will carry a mono balanced signal or a stereo unbalanced signal. So it just depends which cable you're, using.
Sound example was what happens when you feed unbalanced stereo into balanced mono. Everything in the center gets canceled out. And so that's why that presentation had music but no voice, and thus the ensuing confusion.
Interesting.
And the key thing, one of the key things we even, talk about balance, as Derek said, is to try and avoid things like hum or, you know, bus noise or other things like that that I demoed in the podcast and things like that, you know, that may generate noise and feed it into your sound recording or your audio setup.
Ah, is that, for example, why when I'm recording music from my keyboard, I might get the music in the left ear and the hum in the right ear or something like that?
Yep, could very easily be. Can you feel the cable you use and see if it's TRS or TS? Are you using two cables into one? Like, how's your setup?
It's just a single cable going from the headphone to the microphone or whatever into the recording device.
Okay, so who can say what kind of connection that is?
TS.
More than likely. That is correct. That's correct, Christian. Because if he's just getting the keyboard in one side and hum in the other, and he's not getting stereo unbalanced, he's just getting a mono unbalanced.
Yep.
There's no ring for the right channel to travel through on that cable.
But then if I twist the cable around a bit, sometimes it will come in both. I'm not sure exactly.
Okay, so you have a dying cable that essentially is, for all intents and purposes, TS most of the time. Because usually the ring is the first thing to go. That connection is the most fragile. If you look at the guts of a cable, if you take one apart, that's the most fragile part of it. And so that's usually the first thing to go. So I would recommend replacing the cable.
Wow. That is very weird because, like, two or three cables have done exactly the same thing. I wonder if it's the converter that's going.
Yeah. Oh, you're using one of those. Yeah, more than likely. Yeah. Those adapters are very flimsy sometimes. The little eighth to quarter inch adapters that you can get.
Yeah, it's hard to know whether it's the... Because like I said, I've tried two or three cables now, so...
Yeah, get another converter on Amazon. They're like, you know, a decent one's like $3, I think. Honestly, that would be the best thing you could do right now.
All very interesting stuff.
Daz also had a question right quick before we get into phase.
Yeah, I've got a horde of guitar cables, which I connected my system up with, so that's wrong then, really, is it?
If your stuff could be balanced, then yes. If the stuff that you have connected isn't balanced, then it doesn't really matter. There is a trick you can tell about if you have an output which is balanced or not. You plug a set of headphones into that connector, and you're very careful about the level that you're feeding into the source. There was something very, very quiet, and kind of work up. And you hear the sound just on the left, it's an unbalanced output. But if you hear the sound in both channels out of phase, then it's a balanced output and you want to invest in a TRS cable for that connection. Speaking of phase, if there's no more questions, then I'm going to hand this over to Justin.
Okay, guys, this is going to be all about phase. It's going to be very demo heavy. There's some fairly complicated theory, but hopefully that will be adequately elucidated by the demos. So first of all, picture a sound wave. What does it look like? Someone describe to me a sound wave on a piece of graph paper, what you would see.
You would see a line going up and down, I guess, huh?
When you say up and down, do you mean up from zero and down to zero? Or do you mean something else?
I mean up above zero and then down below zero. The zero's in the middle of the cycle.
That's absolutely right. And that's precisely what a sound wave does. So, picture your sound wave as a graph. We have time along the bottom, and we have amplitude up the side. And zero, the zero point, is in the middle. So basically, what we are plotting is negative amplitude. Now, this might seem a little strange and a little theoretical, but think about it. When I talk to you, air leaves my mouth and it vibrates. It vibrates forward and backward, and it vibrates as far backward as it does forward. So we need to represent that backward motion as well as that forward motion, and we do it by negative amplitude. Did someone have a question?
It was just Christian saying the way was going up and down from and crosses at the 0 point. Damien, I think, had something.
Yeah, that has just pretty much gone straight over my head. I don't see how a sound can look like anything because it's not a physical object or whatever. I don't get it.
Okay, sound moves all the time. Yeah, you get that. Sound is vibrating.
Kind of
vibrating.
Get the air. The air moves with. I don't know.
Okay, it moves with a certain force, with a certain pressure, at a certain speed, right? The fewer vibrations per second, the lower the frequency of the sound wave, the slower your swing is swinging back and forth, right?
I don't get this thing about the swing, though. I don't get how it relates to a sound.
Have you put your hand on a big speaker ever, and you feel it vibrating?
Yes.
Okay. So if you notice, that speaker isn't always going forward. Otherwise, the thing would eventually fall off of the stand or move across the room. The cone of the speaker is oscillating, as was said earlier, back and forth, and it has a center position at which it is at rest when there's no sound playing.
So that's what a vibration is? It's actually a movement?
Correct.
Wow.
And so picture breathing. If you don't breathe, you can hold your breath. Now everything is sort of, you know, back. And then you sort of relax and everything kind of centers itself up, as it were. And then if you breathe all the way out, then everything is completely opposite of how it was positioned when you were totally breathing in all the way. So it's like breathing. It's like vibrations, with the 0 point being where things are at rest, where there's no movement. The brief points between the backwards and forwards motion of a speaker vibrating is that 0 point in the middle of the graph that they were talking about. Does that make sense?
So the speaker is going backwards and forwards, but then there's like a central position almost.
Right. So and when nothing's happening, it's at rest. There's a center position.
Right, and is that what we're calling zero? Got it.
We have a couple of people in chat if you want me to.
Yeah, we have Mar and then Monica.
Okay, so when they were able to graph this and actually make it look like something tangible, did they magnify it and put it into some sort of a device that would make it come out in the graph?
That doesn't really matter for the purpose of this example. What you are doing is you are just drawing a picture to visually illustrate a sound. I could do it. I could just get a graph board and a piece of paper, and I could put some pins in it and put some elastic bands around and make an approximation of a nice sound wave. The type of wave that people usually represent this way for demonstration purposes is a sine wave, a pure tone, because it's the easiest to draw. It has no harmonics, so it has nice rounded crests.
I guess what I'm driving at, though, is the gentleman that indicated that it's all just air moving. How did they finally arrive at trying to graph something that they can't see?
The electronic voltage that's sent to the speaker from an amplifier or down a cable from something that is generating the sound. It's all electrical. But I mean, we're talking
I think there's actually something, I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah,
but
you have an
actually
instrument
something
called an oscilloscope.
There
an
you
oscilloscope.
Go.
And that's how it. That's and how the oscilloscope measures it. That's how it works. That's how they work.
You know, as the name
thank
implies,
you.
It measures the oscillation.
So remember the swing example in the Vi Heart video we watched at the beginning of class? If the swing is at rest, nobody's swinging, it's sitting and the chains are just sort of hanging down as long as the wind isn't blowing or whatever. The swing isn't moving. It's all just there. That flat, unmoving position where everything is at rest and there's no movement is the 0 point that Justin was talking about. That's another example. The diaphragm of the speaker at rest or a swing that isn't in motion.
The swing is a simple analogy to get you guys to be able to picture the way air moves when sound is traveling through it, when sound is acting upon it. It moves in a similar way to a person swinging on a swing. The person starts at the middle point, at rest, so with sound, that means there is no sound to hear, and then they push forward with a certain energy, and they go a certain distance forward, and then they go back through the midpoint, back behind where they were, the same distance as they went forward, and then back through the middle point, and so on, at a certain speed. So that's how sound waves work. The number of vibrations per second is frequency, which equates to pitch. But we've got to understand the theory of phase clearly, that there is a backwards movement as well as a forwards movement. Is everybody... Did someone have a question after Mara?
Yeah, Monica had a question.
Yes, I was wondering, when you were talking about the speaker vibrating, I forgot my question, so... You just would feel the air moving in the speaker, right? Or
yeah, the speaker is moving.
If you put your hand on the actual surface of the speaker, you will feel the speaker moving. But yes, you can feel the air in front of the speaker if you have it loud enough as well.
Okay, thanks.
Did anyone else have anything they wanted to say?
Mara says illustration.
I had I played one time my keyboard, and I sang, and I had an amplifier, and there was a deaf lady there that put her hand on the amplifier, and she was enjoying the rhythm of the pulsating going through it, and I thought that was very intriguing.
So, interesting kind of analogy to that, as Mar was saying, and then Justin, you can continue. Ludwig von Beethoven, you guys may have heard of him. He was a very famous composer who played classical music. He was completely deaf. You probably didn't know that, or maybe some of you did. But the point that I'm making with this is he was completely deaf and still managed to make masterpieces of music all by feeling vibrations.
He sawed the legs off his piano and laid the body of the piano on the floor, laid down on his side on the floor, pressing his ear to the floor to hear the vibrations of the notes to get pitches.
So sound is all about movement. That's all we're doing. We're moving things around very, very fast. So fast that instead of perceiving it as movement, like you would a gentle breeze or a fan moving back and forth in front of your face, we perceive it as a sound. We hear it. So phase, it's very important to know, is a relationship. It is the way two sounds interact with one another. And for a meaningful discussion of phase, those sounds must be identical or very similar. Now, let's say we have one sound wave that starts at zero, goes up to plus six amplitude, down to zero again, and then down to minus six amplitude. Let's say we put another sound wave on top of that, add it to the first. And let's say that does exactly the same thing. Let's say it starts at zero, goes to plus six, down through zero to minus six, at the same speed. What will the result of that be, do you think, in terms of sound? How will the volume of the sound we hear change?
It would be twice as loud.
It would be twice as loud, because you have two sound waves, the same frequency, working at the same rate, and they are adding together. They are moving in the same way at the same time. Now, what would happen if we changed the attitude of the second sound wave, if we moved it slightly in time, so that it starts at zero, goes down to minus six, while the other one is coming up to plus six? And then it goes up to zero, through zero, to plus six, while the other one is going down to minus six. What would happen? What would the result?
It says no sound would be heard at all.
No sound would be heard at all. That's right. They cancel each other out. This is phase cancellation. And this can be a good thing in terms of balanced connections. And it can be a bad thing. Because if you have sounds interacting such that they cancel each other out, and you don't hear anything when you want to, that's bad, right? Now we say these two sound waves, they have a phase relationship. When they're both moving the same way at the same time, so up from 0 to plus 6, down through 0 to minus 6 at the same time, at the same rate, we say they are in phase. When they are out of phase, half a cycle out of phase, or 180 degrees out of phase, it's three ways of saying the same thing, well, two ways of saying the same thing, there is nothing. They cancel each other out. They push against each other such that the air doesn't move at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, what would happen if, while the first one had reached plus 6, so it's gone up from 0 to plus 6, what would happen if the second sound wave was just starting out? So when the first one's at plus 6, the second one is at 0. And when the second one makes it to plus 6, the first one's down to 0 again. What would be the resulting volume change?
Damien has a question when you have a chance.
Damien, you go and then we'll see if people can guess this.
I was going to say the one where the first sound's volume's going up while the other's going down, I'd have thought that'd have created more of a kind of wobbly effect rather than cancelling each other out. I don't get how that works.
Because
it could if they were slightly offset, right? But they're doing the exact same thing.
They're moving, but at the same time. It's like, why don't you feel the world spinning? You don't feel the world spinning because you're spinning with it. So the world isn't moving relative to you. You and the world are moving together. So there's no perceptible movement. So with these two sound waves, and we will get to a warbling effect. You're not wrong. We will get to that, but it's slightly different. Because they're moving at the same rate, in the same direction, at the same time, there is no relative movement. And so they just cancel each other out and stay cancelled out. If they're half a cycle out of phase, they would cancel each other out. So, back to my example. So, first sound wave, it's gone from 0 to plus 6. Second sound wave wakes up and realizes, I should be moving. Start at 0, go to plus 6. I'm moving at the same rate as the first sound wave. What is the resulting volume change?
Christian said he thinks it would double. That's what Christian said.
No, it wouldn't double. If you think about it, this isn't the example where we have both sounds reaching plus 6 at the same time, which is a total of plus 12 amplitude. We have one...
He says half as loud.
Yeah. And Dez and Dez Mars and... said their names, so I don't know if they're going to guess or ask a question.
Would a person get that weird sort of half behind you sound that you demonstrated the other day?
No, that's for complex sounds. We'll get to that. We're building this to slow stages. Did someone else have something to say?
Monica does.
I guess I feel like I'm stuck. I'm trying to understand, how do you know the answers to the questions? Because I'm just trying to listen and try to understand. And I'm like, wow.
Okay. Well, picture the swing again. Swing is at rest, and then it starts being pushed forward, then it swings backwards. Say somebody is on the opposite side of the swing, and they're pushing against the swing. Someone is, without them crashing into each other, pushing the swing forward at the exact same time as someone is pushing the swing back. They're not going to be able to move.
Right.
Because the efforts of one person, instead of doubling the amount of amplitude the swing will reach, is canceling out amplitude that the swing would make as a result of the effort of the single person pushing. Now, does that help?
Yes.
And in terms of like the multiple, because Justin was using two waves instead of kind of one long thing, I think it's my only kind of issue with that particular analogy. And in terms of that, you know, you can imagine the two swings instead, but one's going in one direction and the other one's going in the other direction. and they end up colliding. And then they stop because they crashed into each other.
In some cases, let's say you're swinging next to your friend and you're trying to have a conversation, but while they're going forward, you're going back. It's going to be kind of hard to carry on that conversation. The phase or the oscillation of your swings are going relatively at the same rate, then you're able to carry on that conversation easier.
Thanks.
Was there... Des has a question. Fire away, Des.
Yeah, so I was saying, would you get like a beep in the middle of a soft sound, something like that?
No, this is all to do with... So, remember when we played sine waves? Just one simple beep. If you add another sine wave to that at the same frequency, and it's in phase, it will be twice as loud, right? You mix two copies of something together, it will be twice as loud. But that sine wave, those sine waves, are moving up and down and interacting with each other. And so, there you go. There's a sine wave. I was thinking about doing that. That's a sine wave. That's one lonely little sine wave. Now, we could add a second sine wave to that. And we could invert its phase. We could shift it in time, basically, so that as one is going up to positive amplitude, the other is coming down, and we can make it disappear entirely. Because every movement of one wave is opposed with exact equality by the other. So it cancels out, there's no movement. That's half a cycle out of phase. A quarter of a cycle out of phase is where things are half as loud.
So I'm going to, if I may demonstrate, to reinforce your point, because I was going to do the phase thing, and it kind of went the other way, and then I realized, oh, well, it's going the other way because it's exactly what you were saying. So this sine wave exists. I'm going to add another sine wave on top of it, but it's going to start slightly behind the other. And can we do this? Yeah, we can. See, it's varying. If I do this, see, they're stacking, and it's actually starting to clip. So there's one sine wave. All right, now, see how nothing changed? That one's louder because it starts at the same time. But if I add another and it starts slightly differently, look, it cut in half. Yep. So there's your quarter out of phase deal, just like Justin was saying. Now, if it's completely out of phase, you get
nothing at all. Do people get that?
Yeah, but you were saying it above the line of zero, one was going up and then coming down to zero.
Yeah.
And does that mean then that it's half the volume then or something?
So the reason why it's half, Des, is because, so as Justin was explaining, right, if the first wave is doing its little thing and going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, then the second wave's like, hey, wait a second, I'm supposed to be going back and forth, wait, what's going on here? But by the time that the second wave realized this first wave already went forward, so he's already a little bit ahead while this wave is moving, or is about to move. So when the second wave moves forward, this guy's already coming back to zero, and then backwards.
This is why I did it with numbers, and this is why I used specific numbers. So we've got two waves, half a cycle out of phase. When one is at plus 6, the other is at minus 6. What is 6 minus 6? It's 0, right? Absolutely.
Yep.
So the overall amplitude is always 0. That's why I hoped the numbers would help. The important thing about this, and we will show you other examples as well during the course of this demonstration. The important thing to know is that identical or similar sounds, if they reach your ears at slightly different times, or if they occupy the same place at different stages of their vibration, they will cancel out a certain degree, which will affect their volume. They might end up being somewhat louder than they were. They might end up being somewhat quieter, or they might end up disappearing altogether.
Damien had a question, and then Adam.
Go, Damien.
When we did the sine wave example just then, I didn't hear any changes in volume. I think I'm remembering right that amplitude is volume, right? I didn't hear any changes except for when the effects were added. So I don't get how it can be going from 6 to minus 6 or whatever.
You heard it
Yeah,
disappear.
That's what I was going to say.
You did hear a change in volume.
I heard the canceling part out, but when he was trying to demonstrate the quarter one, the volume was varying so much because he kept turning it up and down too. So it was a bit confusing.
No, what I'm trying to say is that the sound itself did not sound like it was varying in volume until the effects were applied.
No, we haven't applied any effects. We have just changed the phase relationship between two sounds. We haven't changed their volume. We haven't applied any processes to them at all. We have just changed their phase. And that is what made them disappear. And that is what made them get louder and softer, because they were cancelling each other out, nothing else. Does that make sense? You were hearing the changes in phase. That's all you were hearing.
Yeah, but didn't you say that the sound wave was moving from 6 to minus 6 or whatever? I couldn't hear them changes.
You wouldn't, because that sound wave is what, Derek? 440 hertz? About that. Let's say it's
now, listen to this one.
Hertz.
This note is like... That's less than one hertz as a saw wave, or a square wave, excuse me.
What 440 hertz means is, and plus 6 and minus 6, they're arbitrary numbers, let's understand that. But what 440 hertz means is that it is going from 0 to plus 6 to 0 to minus 6 440 times. You're never going to be able to hear that. You're not going to be able to distinguish the individual vibrations. So that's why you hear it happening, because it sounds down to you. You can't hear the individual vibrations of a sound wave. Whereas you can with the example Derek is demonstrating now.
So if I speed this up, you'll start to hear it as a pitch.
There it goes. See?
Wow.
Yep.
Get it?
That is amazing. I never ever looked at sound like that before. Wow.
So when you were hearing tick, 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 you were hearing the individual, well, indirectly, you were hearing the individual oscillations of the sound. And they oscillate so fast, they become a pitch. Someone else, I believe, had a question.
Adam.
Yes, just quickly, stacking the waves on top of each other in phase, like we did with two waves, if you were to put three waves, four waves identically on top of each other, would that triple, quadruple the sound volume level, etc.?
Yes. Yeah, it would always get louder. If you start to mix things in out of phase, then you would start to reduce the volume, depending on how much out of phase they were. So obviously, if you have one wave half a cycle out of phase with three waves, the net result isn't going to be zero, because it's 18 minus 6 rather than 6 minus 6.
They have a cumulative effect. Yeah, they have a cumulative effect then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So far we've dealt with identical sounds. Have you ever been in a room with two clocks? Maybe one in the kitchen and one in the bathroom. Have you heard how they tick? Anybody heard two clocks ticking at the same time?
Yeah, I have.
Jason says yes, Damien says yes.
Okay, describe to me how that sounds.
Depends on the speed.
Go on.
Well, if one's ticking faster than the other, obviously it's almost going to be like a weird time signature in music. That's how I kind of see it, in like a musical way. It's weird.
Okay. Because, does anyone else want to contribute to this? Jason, I believe you said you'd heard two clocks.
Sure. I was thinking some of it is such that if they're close enough, they actually line up for a short period of time, and then they go out, and then they come back.
That is exactly right. That is exactly what they do. I am just going to try this again so that people can hear this who haven't heard it before. So, at the moment, they're ticking at the same speed. And now, I don't know why that's doing that. This is fun.
One clock's literally running slow now.
It is.
That is awesome. The grandfather clock is dying.
It's old.
It is.
Damien, something to say.
Down. Here they come.
There it goes.
There we go. So we saw them waver in and out of phase with each other. That is basically what they did. And this is what happens when you have almost identical sounds working together. You get a changing phase relationship. And that
oh, cool.
You're warbling.
Who was it that mentioned the warbling?
It was me.
It was Damien.
So listen, it's going to slow down in a minute and go back into phase. That is two sine waves being varied in pitch and also panned around the stereo field. We'll get to why that was in a minute. But you heard that warbling. Who was it mentioned the warbling again?
It was me.
Yeah, it was Damien.
So that is that warbling. That is sounds going in and out of phase because of their slightly different frequencies. They're vibrating at a slightly different rate. And that means they go in and out of phase. And people use this for all kinds of things. People use this as a cool sci-fi effect. And people, Derek loves these. Derek's a big fan. There's a thing called binaural beats. That's what this technique is called. It's called beats because you can hear the kind of throbbing. It has a rhythm. Like that. That's kind of a beating. So it's called beats. And binaural beats are these waves that sound like that, and they are, you can listen to them, you can YouTube it, binaural beats, and it's supposed to have effects on your brain. It's supposed to stimulate creativity and calmness and sleep and all kinds of things, and they go woo 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 woo, and that woo 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 is the result of phase. That woo woo is a technical term. If it confuses anybody, then let me know, we'll go back over it. It's cool. You love those, don't you, Derek? Big binaural beats fan.
I think they're cool sounding. I don't think they do anything for the brain that they're advertised to do, but they sound cool.
Well, they supposedly do. What can I say?
Adam, I think, said it's a bit like tuning a guitar.
It is exactly like tuning a guitar.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It's exactly like tuning a guitar. The two notes being at slightly different frequencies, they go out of phase with each other. If you sing out of tune with yourself or with someone else, you will hear exactly the same thing. A reverberation. However, detuning to a certain extent can be cool. Lots of techno music, trance music, uses detuned synths. Like, if anyone's heard Yeah by Usher, the lead synth in that carries the riff, is made by putting two synths slightly out of tune with each other. So you get, and it's a pleasing sound if it's done right. Make sense?
Yes, says Adam.
Okay. Someone had a question. Hit Damien. Me with it.
How do you know if a sound vibrates so fast, then how do you know if it's, you know, if it's a quarter or half out of phase, that kind of thing?
You don't need to know that for all audio applications, because sounds change so quickly. Complex sounds. We're starting you small with simple sounds in the lab, as it were, and then when you understand how phase works, you know, we can deal with more complex sounds. If you, well, the most important application of phase is if you have two copies of the same track, if you mix two pieces of audio together and they start at exactly the same time and they're identical, then you are going to make things twice as loud. That is things being in phase. So that's the most important thing is to know. The rest to know is that you need to be careful of sounds with common frequency ranges, that they may clash in phase land. And if they clash, then they may cancel each other out completely, or, and we're getting a bit ahead, but certain frequencies may cancel themselves out. How many ears do you have? You have two ears. One can hear left, and one can hear right. How is it, then, that you can tell when things are behind you, and above you, and in front you, and around you?
Damien?
That's the sense of binaural. It's because of the shape of your ears, is it not?
It's not because of the shape of your ears. It's because of how far they are apart from one another. It's called the interaural time difference. Now, those of you who are wearing headphones, I'm going to show you something now. Now I'm panning all around, or I will be, when I make this slight change. Here we go. I'm swinging around your ears. Am I doing it left to right, horizontally? Or am I going round your head, for those of you who are wearing headphones?
You're going round.
I'm going round. I'm not just going horizontally from left to right, as I will demonstrate in a minute. I'm going around. How am I achieving this? You only have two headphones. They are separated by your skull. One ear cannot hear what the other is doing, so the interaural time difference doesn't work as such. How am I making this happen?
Adam says phase.
It is phase. It exactly is phase. If I was going to go and pan, I pan to the left, and I pan to the right. Here we go, all the way over here. I'm walking backwards and forwards in a straight line. But if I add phase in, like this, then I can go all around your head.
Monica has a question.
Which is cool. 3D panning is awesome. Ask away.
How are you physically doing that? Like, I can hear your voice doing it. But what are you physically doing?
I'm using an effect.
He's using an effect.
Okay, sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have asked.
No. It's fine. I am manipulating not only the pan of my voice, i.e. where I am in the stereo field, I am also manipulating the phase of my voice. So it sounds like I'm going here, there, and everywhere. Now, I want to show you something. I want to show you how this can break. I did a project recently, and the concept was that it would be a lady singing from an open window down to a street, and someone would be listening. So I wanted the window to open, and I wanted it to sound like it was above the perspective of the audio. So it sounds, and I have to switch projects to do this, so bear with me, it sounds like this. Hear that?
We heard the window, but we didn't hear singing.
No, you wouldn't. No, I'm showing it you in isolation first.
Okay.
So what I did was I applied an effect to that, the same one that manipulates phase and pan, except I didn't have it move this time, and I'm just going to put that on. There we go.
There you go.
So that's not just in the center, is it? You can tell it's somewhere else in your field of hearing, other than just the center. So I did my best to make it sound like it was above. So if we put that in context now.
Sing for
And there we have someone who is kind of above us as you can get without using surround sound. Bad things happen, though, when you take the stereo away. Listen out for the window now.
Sing for yourself.
Who heard the window? It's not there. It's vanished. Why has it vanished?
Directly out of phase.
It was directly out of phase. I wanted it to sound like it was above me, but I also wanted it to sound like it was directly in front of me, so I had to put it 180 degrees out of phase with itself. And that's fine when it's in stereo, because you have different sounds going to different channels. So that's okay. But if you have two sounds trying to be in the same place, half a cycle out of phase, what happens?
Cancels out.
It does cancel out. It disappears completely. And I did one. So when you finish mixing, as we've talked about, you should try and listen to things on as many devices as possible, including mono devices. In fact, there are some people that recommend you should mix in mono all the way through, pretty much, to spot issues just like this, phase issues. So I'd done days and days and days of work on this project, and I came to listen to it back on my mobile, and I was like, where's the window gone? And I realized that the very coolness of my plugin worked against me, and I had to actually get rid of it. So in mono, it now sounds like this.
Sing for yourself.
There you go, the window's back. But the cool aboveness is gone, which I had to sacrifice in order for most people to be able to hear it.
Could you not have, now this would have suffered the partial out of phase problem, and you may want to talk about this later because it would be the cone filter thing, but could you have actually delayed the window by like literally milliseconds on one channel? Because then you have sort of the best of both worlds. There's enough of it in phase to at least have a little bit of it in mono, but enough out of phase to where you could have, you know, that lack of focus, that kind of behind you effect.
It's worth a try. You can experiment with lots of things that way. So that was a total cancellation. I'll have to experiment with that. I have no idea if it would work. So that's one way of doing things. That's one phase problem. That's total cancellation. Who can hear problems with these two pieces of audio that I'm about to play you? The first is a blast from the past for me. I was recording with some friends at school. We were doing Little Shop of Horrors as a play, and this is the sound of us recording. Who can spot? There's two problems with this. One is relevant to this study group, one is not. Let's see who that isn't an instructor can spot both problems.
This is all just...
Hold on a moment.
This is all just about sorted. Let's just... hold on, I'm just going to fiddle about with this microphone slightly. There we go. Don't worry about all that beeping and stuff, just... John, right.
Yeah, it's going to be great with some reverb and that added on.
Right. Okay, here we go. On the 21st day of the month of September, in an early year of a decade not too long before our own, the human race suddenly encountered a deadly threat to its very existence.
What are the two problems with that?
Christian says he can hear it. What can you hear?
I can hear this phasing problem. You know, as he spoke, for example, as he said, always on those letters, on those sounds, there was kind of high-pitched noise. I don't know how to say it correctly, but...
Kind of like
no,
the...
that's absolutely right.
Kind of like the noises where... I'm trying to explain what he's saying. Kind of like if he was kind of like tunneled. Like tunnel speaking.
Yes. It's like some high-pitched echo, which would be pitched would cover every word which he says, kind of tunneled.
Like talking in a tube.
There you go.
Exactly that. Exactly that. Who noticed the other problem, just for bonus points?
Dez has something.
Control shift.
There was a sort of rattle when he said human. Something like there was a different sound when he was saying human.
Let's listen again.
This is all just about sorted.
Yeah, it's going to be great with some reverb and that added up.
Mm. Here we go. On the 21st day, in an early year of a decade, not too long before our own.
There it is.
The human race suddenly encountered a deadly threat to its very existence.
Anyone hear that?
Yeah, this, and I can hear kind of, it's like in the tube, but I can also hear kind of exact tone, like, which it makes when he speaks, and for example, when he doesn't speak, this noise, shh, is also kind of tunneled.
There is that tunneling effect. There's also ground hum, which is just lovely. There's all kinds of problems with this recording that we had to use. Sorry?
I did put my name in chat and I was going to say, but he must have missed it.
I did, I'm sorry about that. There was ground hum, there was music in the background, there was hissing noise. It was just a generally bad recording. But the problem we are interested in for this is the phase problem. It manifests as this kind of tubular tunneling noise. I bought this professional sound effect, and I want to show you this. Listen to this. Can you hear that? It's got the same problem on it?
Yes.
So, why do we think that problem has occurred? Can anyone guess? The clue is in what the guy with me says at the start of the recording.
Jason has a guess.
The microphone positions relative to one another. It sounded like he was adjusting that.
That's right. My good friend adjusted the placement of the microphones such that the sound arrived at both microphones. There is sound common to both channels. Except it arrives out of phase in some portions of the frequency spectrum, but not all. This is what's called comb filtering. And it's called that because you look at the whole spectrum from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. At some points in that spectrum, the signals are going to be in phase. So the peaks are going to be more pronounced. Like we talked about, there's going to be plus sixes adding together to make plus 12s. In some areas of the spectrum, though, they're going to be out of phase. And so the resulting signal is going to dip down. And so you have what looks like the teeth of a comb, where the spectrum goes up to very pronounced peaks, and it's those peaks that make that horrible ringing noise, and it's going to have some more pronounced troughs as well. Does that make sense?
Damien had a question.
When I first heard that, I actually thought it was a bit of microphone feedback.
Yeah, no, it's not feedback. It's phase. It's a phase problem due to the placement of the microphones. If you're going to make a stereo recording, and we'll cover this in future lectures, and you're going to use two microphones, the thing you have to beware of is phase. That you have not placed the microphones such that you will get these horrible tubular effects.
To kind of go back to Justin's similar instrumental thing idea, you can emulate that same kind of cone filtering effect if they're just a tiny bit off. Because what ends up happening is they end up not all being on the exact same wavelength, right? But it has to be extremely similar, vocal takes or instrumentals or whatever. And this is kind of what people try to do when they try to isolate vocals and things, is they try to get them as close to in phase as possible and then take it out of phase. But you get this kind of cone filtering thing until, they're right lined up with each other.
An example of feedback phasing. Because someone mentioned feedback. If you're running live sound, and Clement might find this interesting,
and you have feedback problems, of course, there's the obvious way to approach it where you use your equalizer to notch out the frequency. And we'll talk about equalizers, you know, in the effects lecture. But if you can put your mics out of phase or your monitors out of phase, then what you get is twice the amount of cycles that have to occur for the microphone to feed back. So the feedback, when it occurs, would occur an octave lower. But that peak that's an octave lower may not necessarily be one that the system suffers from. So you can put the resonant point down to a frequency where it doesn't matter if it's, you know, there or not, because it wouldn't peak there. And so you can use phase to compensate for feedback without equalization. So you can do less damage to the overall sound and have to shape it less if you just flip your monitors out of phase. Now, that's to say all the monitors relative to the house speakers, not one versus the other, because then it does the cone filtering on stage. That's just an observation that I read about, and I forgot where, but I read about it. I tried it. It worked, and it was cool.
So here, I have another professionally produced sound effect in my sound effects library, which I wanted to make the sound of an exploding light bulb, which sounds kind of cool, until you do this. So you make it mono again, and I don't know why it's doing that. I don't know why it's panning me when I told it not to. You have a stereo sound, and you make it mono, and you have this horrible comb filtering noise, which is no good. You don't want that. So that's another example of comb filtering. However, sometimes we like comb filtering. Sometimes we use it very deliberately. And this is called a flanger. And what this does is it delays one copy of my voice a tiny amount. Remember, we talked about the Haas effect in a study group, where if you have two copies of a sound delayed by an infinitesimal amount, the ear can't tell. It still hears it as one sound. Well, now we're varying the delay, we're varying the gap between the two copies, and we're causing, deliberately, this comb filtering. And we like it, and I'm sure you can think of lots of examples where that's used in songs and music of all kinds, and cinematography and sci-fi voices and all kinds of things.
Queen uses it a lot.
Yeah, Queen likes it. So that's a flanger, and that was actually discovered by having two tape decks next to each other, putting your finger on one to vary its speed and making it delay ever so slightly and getting this cool noise. It was actually used for the first time in the 40s on a piece of jazz music, and it was very popular. The Beatles loved it. There you go. So that is comb filtering. No. The bad and the good. On a sound effect, you really don't want it. I was most displeased when I was going through a sound effects library and heard that vehicle driving with the microphones poorly placed and, you know, the comb filtering present. But sometimes you do want it. It's been used in computer games and all kinds of things.
Mar had a question, by the way.
What is the difference between a phase shifter and a flanger?
Ooh. I was just coming to that.
Ooh, nice.
So, let me just add a phaser to myself here. Okay. Now, I am phasing. Can everybody hear that? Can everybody hear how I sound different? Hello?
If you increase the feedback so it kind of loops into itself a little bit.
Yeah, because the only thing that we're hearing is like the hissing is changing, but not really you.
Okay. Here we go, coming up. Feedback at minus 80%. Here we are. Let's change some other parameters, see if you guys can hear it. Oh yeah, let's change the depth. That'll always be good.
You have to put the feedback at like 60 or something before it's really obvious.
How's this now? How are we doing? Whoa.
Whoa.
let's not do quite that much.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's not what we want. There we go. that's kind of confusing because it says, oh, it must be positive and negative feedback because it says I'm a, oh, it says I was at minus 40 something.
There. There's your nice.
So I was decreasing the value where I should have been. So I can change it back the other way, apparently. And I can go this way. And here we have 64% feedback or so. And I'm phasing nicely. So can everyone hear the difference between those noises? The flanger and the phaser. Can everyone hear how they sound different?
Yeah, like one is sort of shifting almost the frequency of the... Sounds like you're talking through your mouth, like you're talking through a Jew's harp or something.
So...
Damien has a question.
Go on, Damien.
I would say one sounds gobbly, one sounds squeaky.
Yeah, that's kind of how I would... It almost sounded like the phaser itself was kind of changing your face, whereas the...
So this is a flanger.
There you go.
So here I am, flanging away, and I can adjust the feedback on this as well. Let's do that. How's this now? There I am, phasing very nicely. So, that's a flanger.
Flanging, yep.
Think C-3PO and other similar creatures. And this is a phaser, where I'm going in and out in a different way. Now, basically, the way these effects differ is that a flanger is a simple, varying, tiny delay. It takes the whole signal and shifts the delay back and forth a few over the range of about 10-15 milliseconds and makes those comb filtery type noises. A phaser, so that everything is in proportion. There are peaks and troughs along the wave in terms of the comb filtering, but they're all to equal amounts. What a phaser does is it applies a series of filters to the audio going into it that are not the same across the spectrum. So you have a non-linear, enharmonic, that is to say it does not follow a harmonic series response with a phaser. And that's why it sounds less musical, right? Because there's not really as much tonality to it unless you turn the feedback up ridiculously high, which you're not meant to do, really. There's not as much tonality to it as there is with the comb filters. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Some phasers are created by flangers out of phase. If you have your tape looping into itself and you flip that phase around, you get the same effect. So you can do it through the filters as they go through and just sort of start subtracting things like Justin was talking about. But you can kind of do it in another way by doing the same technique you would use to create a flanger, but flipping that out of phase. So as opposed to doubling certain things in volume and changing that, you're subtracting certain things that way. So the filters work and the delay parts work. So both of them are two ways to get a phaser.
So phasers are less tonal sound. Flangers are more tonal, comb-filtered sound. I'm just going to prove to you that delay is indeed how flanging works. So everyone remember this? The Haas effect example we used in the study group?
Yes.
And then nudge. This. So now we have a delay. Hear how it changes?
Yep.
I can still only hear that flanging sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Causes the comb filtering that we've been talking about. So it's just pure delays. So the takeaways from this really, and we, you know, we can do more examples. The takeaways from this really are beware phase. Use it to your advantage. Be aware that what sounds good in stereo may not sound good in mono. So always listen to your stuff in mono to see if you hear any of these tubular type sounds, to see if the character of sounds changes dramatically. because it shouldn't when you're listening in mono. Beware, you know, those kinds of phase cancellations where things can sound behind you when you don't mean them to. So, for example, if we make ourselves stereo again and we highlight this item and we move it to a very small amount of time ahead of the other one, let's do 0.001 milliseconds. So it's going to be a millisecond ahead. It doesn't sound the greatest, right? It didn't actually work as I intended it to work. But remember, when I did it the other time, it sounded like it was behind my head. You don't want that always. You don't want it in your guitar solo, certainly not. It sounds distracting. But you can use phase to your advantage with cool effects. You can use it to make unpleasant noises disappear, as in the case of balanced connections. You can use it to tell the differences between things in terms of transparency. So if you take a WAV file and an MP3 file and you load them into your audio editor and you flip them out of phase with each other, all the common content will be cancelled and only the differences will be left. I believe Derek did this for his record demo to his friend that he showed the other week. Was that how you did it, Derek?
Yeah, pretty much. I took the MP3 and the product as best as I could make it from his MP3, and I showed him how the problem, yeah, we've removed the record problems, but the artifacts that were created by the crackling of the record are still there. So let's, you know, show the artifacts and the nastiness. And that was what that beautiful combo was. Scariest version of Cinderella I'd ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, it was Cinderella, was it?
Sure was. Yeah.
So phase can be your enemy. Phase can be your friend. Listen carefully to your mixes. Listen to them in mono. Listen to them on different devices. Don't try to do too many fancy stereo 3D panning things which involve phase, because when you collapse it to mono, it's not likely to work all that well. So you can do these things, but you have to be careful. Same with the Haas effect. Remember how I showed you, yeah, okay, you get this cool delay when you have one version of the track panned hard left, one version of it panned hard right. You delay it a little bit. You have this cool stereo separation, but when you collapsed it to mono, if you weren't careful, you get comb filtering. The guitar sounded kind of screechy. So you have to make sure that your listening experience is going to be a good one for as many of your listeners as possible, and phase is what can really trip mixes up.
Damien has a question, and then Jason.
Putting a WAV file against an MP3 file will give you the difference.
If you take a WAV file, so a WAV version of a sound, and you load it into something, and then you mix an MP3 copy with it, and you flip one of those out of phase, you can do this in a single track program by inverting one of the files. Or you can do it in multi-track land by all kinds of ways. And you play the result.
Including inverting.
Then all the common stuff will be cancelled out, and you will only hear the lossy compressed artifacts. In fact, this is how I discovered that MP3s were bad. Is I was listening to one at school, and the plug came halfway out of my headphone socket. So I had the phase cancellations that Derek has talked about in the past, when we talked about cables and so on. And I could hear all the wobbly, weird, watery noises in my music. And I was like, what the heck's going on? This sounds kind of cool. but once it was pointed out to me, then when I plugged my headphones back in properly, I could hear those warbling noises in my music, and then it wasn't so cool. Then I was like, why did my music break? And I was kind of sad.
But doesn't an MP3 file start later than a WAV file?
No, it doesn't have to. Why do you think that?
I've seen older encoders do it. There's a version of LAME for a while that would add just enough of an offset to be annoying.
That's not a problem.
The new LAME doesn't do that anymore.
Nope.
Mine still does it, which is weird.
LAME 3.9, I think, is the new one.
I'm not sure what the version is. It's just the version that Goldwave tries to download.
Yeah, there's a new one, and then Goldwave just updated itself a couple months ago, so there might be a new one there that you might want to check.
But that was an excellent question, and it showed an excellent understanding of phase, because yes, if they didn't start at exactly the same time, flipping them out of phase would be a problem. That shows an excellent understanding of phase. Well done for highlighting that as a problem. If your MP3 encoder does still do that, all you would have to do is snip the delay off the beginning so that they start at the same time, and then you could flip them out of phase. But you'd have to be very, very precise about that to the millisecond.
The other thing, Justin brought up a point about how if you pull out your headphones, or if your headphones break a certain way or whatever, you can hear kind of all these cool delays or, you know, watery things in a lossy transcode or whatever. And that's true. You can. As a matter of fact, when I was small, I used to do that just because I thought it was cool. Like, I had no, you know, realization at the time that was actually not cool, or, you know, that it was, you know, a product of that. So I used to actually do that all the time, like pull my headphones halfway out just so I could, you know, hear the weird, you know, delays on a track that, you know, that happen when the center channel's taken out, or any of the weird lossy artifact transcodes or whatever. But the interesting reason I'm pointing this out with tip double ring sleeve headphones or whatever, you can't do that as easily. It doesn't work.
So we have covered a lot. Oh, sorry, Derek.
No, I was just backing Jessica up, because you can't, you know, you put the second ring to the first ring as opposed to lifting the thing. What would it be? Tip ring sleeve. So you'd actually put the ring to slip and ring to sleeve and the... but you would shift everything, and that would create a phase problem, but you had that extra ring, and you just make really loud popping noises when you do that.
Yep. Basically, if you pull it out halfway, it actually cancels everything out. So.
And this is irrelevant now, but it actually will also apply the voltage of the plug-in power provided by your device to the actual earbuds, as opposed to the microphone, which makes a big giant pop.
So we have covered a lot. The key thing to know is that if the time intervals between two identical or similar sounds are right or wrong, then, or even if the sounds are different but they share frequency components in common, then you are going to have phase issues. You may want them. You may have deliberately introduced them, but you need to know that they're there and how to manage them, and that what works in stereo doesn't work in mono always. And I hope you guys see, some of this stuff is very dry, but I hope you guys see that how this stuff builds on itself. So we talked about sound waves. We talked about how we hear sound waves. Now we're talking about how we hear sound waves interacting with each other, mm-hmm. in terms of phase, in terms of intermodular distortion, in terms of harmonic content, in terms of masking. And we're talking about cables and how phase applies there. And we've even touched a little bit on effects and how you can use phasing and flanging and comb filtering in positive ways.
Before Jason asks this question, I basically just want to kind of second what Justin said, and that sometimes you want to make things deliberately sound phasey or whatever. Like you said, it depends on what it is you're trying to do. But just keep in mind what it is you're trying to do, and keep an eye out for these things, so that if you do have a situation like that, you know, depending on what it is that you're doing, maybe you can fix it. Or if you don't want to fix it, then maybe you can make it make it more awesome or more broken, depending on what you're trying to do.
See, I didn't know about phase. And when I heard the recording that me and my friend did, when I was editing it, I was listening to it and I was like, what is this problem? What has happened here? How have we broken this? We haven't applied any effects, because I knew a delay would make that effect. We haven't applied any effects. How has this gone wrong? And now I know what happened. And if I'd have known at the time and heard it, I would have been able to say, we need to move our microphones a bit. So the more you know, the more you'll be able to fix. Jason.
Sure. I actually thought of two questions, but the first one is, you were talking about how it's important to hear it in mono so that if you're going to lose something, you're going to find out, or if there are any problems, you'll hear them in the mono mix. But what if your intentions are very clear about having this wonderful stereo experience and, oh my goodness, and, you know, I don't want to have to compromise to make it work in mono too. Do you just put a disclaimer out there?
You have to,
yeah,
tailor it to your audience. And if you're making a piece of music which you want to be played on the radio and you want people to be playing out and about, then yes, you are going to have to compromise. Now, you can do cool stereo things mindfully of phase.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that you can try and do to fix phase problems. You don't have to abandon the whole thing like I did with the window. You can try and fix it so you can still have cool stereo things, but maybe you need to make them slightly less cool. Maybe you need to make a trade-off. All your listeners are listening on headphones, then we're good and knock yourself out and don't worry about mono compatibility. But for most things, podcasts where people are going to be listening to them on Bluetooth speakers, audio dramas that people are going to be listening to in the car and as they do their ironing, I can't think of many mixing situations where you wouldn't have to make mono compatibility a priority.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Basically, I mean, if you have to make it, you know, stereo, then for whatever reason, that's and keep it that way, that's probably something you may want to disclaim. But try your best to always, you know, mix for mono compatibility, especially for me, if you're a musician, because you want people to hear your music no matter what device they're hearing it in. Now, you know, a lot of times, like, especially nowadays, they have, you know, cables and things where you can plug your phone up to your car, and so you get your nice kind of stereo image or whatever, but a lot of people don't think about that sometimes. Or sometimes they're just, you know, they have their phone in their hand and they're listening to something on Facebook or Sound, you know, Cloud or whatever. So just keep that in mind, you know, for mono compatibility, that, you know, try to do it if you can.
Well, here's the thing, this is jumping ahead. You can always EQ things differently on each channel. Like, you can have a mono source that starts out mono, but you can totally fake stereo by just EQing each side a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
You had a second question, I believe.
Sure. I was just going to make an observation, maybe, that the chorus effect that is often used, is that a play on phase as well?
Maybe. But it's more multiple, well, we're getting ahead, but it's more multiple pitch, it's multiple delays that are shifted back and forward in time.
It's like,
but remember, where you have delays, you're also going to have phase. So yeah, depending on the settings of your chorus plugin, you may introduce phasing and flanging and things.
Yep, it's basically what I was going to say. It was a basic chorus is like a beefed up flanger. Just the delays and things are kind of varied in pitch a bit so that it sounds thicker.
And you can get them to the ridiculous degree of where it doesn't sound phasing, but then, of course, you run into the fact that then you can hear the delays moving, and so then it just sounds really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica is going to demo chorus for us in the effects lecture, and I've got to say, I'm very much looking forward to that, because I hate chorus plugins. I've never been able to make them work for me. They either sound phasey and flangey, or they sound like discrete delays, as Derek said, or they sound...
So
pitch shifted to the point of unreality. I can't make them work. So
to basically kind of, I guess, get you guys looking forward to it, I guess, I don't know, but Derek can kind of vouch for me. When I took this course, well, the older version, I actually used a chorus plugin on my final project. Now, I used it in conjunction with a reverb, so it made it cooler. But the point is I actually got my singular voice to sound like a choir with a chorus plugin. And that's kind of hard to do sometimes. Monday is microphones and preamps and gain staging. So that's what's going on Monday.
Is there an assignment for today?
No, there aren't.
For today, there's not.
You don't tend to get assignments for study groups. If you want to do further reading and further YouTubing about phase and flanging and comb filtering and the good and the bad compatibility, then I would highly recommend it. It certainly wouldn't do you any harm. But there's no compulsory assignment. Maybe as Ma
Adam,
did
go ahead.
The other week. Oh, sorry.
Adam had a question. Maybe.
Well, I'll just say what I was going to say, and we can come back to Adam. Maybe, as Mar did the other week, you will find a particularly interesting article or YouTube link, and it can be added to the wiki. Like, the wiki can be expanded by the students as well as the staff, so feel free to go digging if you so wish. Adam, are you there?
Oh no, he broke. Omar had one as well, so...
No, I just need to go and get ready for work.
Oh, but yeah, you're fine.
Thanks.
Pretty much...
It was very cool. I will miss Monday, but I will try to be there at least for the one on the 12th. I won't be able to be here if there's a study group in between.
That's fair enough.
Ah!
What was that?
That's abuse of the chorus plugin.
Oh my god.
Nice.
Yeah, that was
my
definitely
ride here.
A...
See ya.
Bye. Happy birthday. You can do a whole choir of people
Bye.
Singing happy birthday with us. Happy birthday.
See, that I can do.
See, it's great.
Yeah.
That I can do.
Well, it's
Make
really
it
easy
musical.
To do that with a chorus.
Yeah, I can do that. Right. I can't make it sound musical.
Yeah, I'll definitely show a lot more about some of that. Well, not a lot more, because we do have a ton of effects to cover those days. But a little bit more about how to kind of fine-tune some of those when we get to choruses.
This is the plugin she used. She just used it a lot more tastefully. So,
that's a very Hitchhiker's Guide.
Oh, yes. It is.
Does anyone else have any more questions before we wrap up?
Yeah, Daz and Damien had questions. Randy had something to say. Real quick, though, Timmy Tope, the podcast is actually up now. Everything is working. Everything was down yesterday. That's why you couldn't get to where you needed to go. But everything is back up.
I couldn't hear any stereo today. Have you got an article on how to set up your system properly?
There will be articles on how to set up your system. Well, there will be class time given to how to set up things properly. Also, when the podcast appears, you'll hear everything in stereo, I hope. There are other articles available on YouTube and the like. And the wiki will be expanded in due course with primarily written stuff, honestly, unless people can think of a phase tutorial they would really like to see in the wiki, because the lectures is where we do our demos, mostly. So the wiki will primarily be written. So once you've fixed your setup, you'll be able to hear the podcast in stereo fine. Did Damien have something?
Yeah, it made me think when we were demonstrating that chorus thing with the voice and what have you. Is there a way to change the pitch of the voice without making it sound chipmunky or monstrous?
Yes, but we'll get to that. Format-based pitch shifting is definitely a thing that exists.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
We'll get into pitch effects and into harmonizers and into formant switching and all that. So,
Randy?
Yeah, my question is, it's just a general question, but I was listening to the iAccess VO podcast, and I noticed... In the last 5 minutes, I could hear it through my headphones. I could hear some music kind of in the background. And when I asked them about it, they said it's actually an older podcast. And my thought was, I was just wondering, is that what they use as their, what you're referring to as a floor, to not let any sound in below that floor? Just wonder if I was thinking of that in the right way. It was very faint.
That would be their noise floor, because it's unwanted noise. That shouldn't have been there, I believe, if I understand you correctly. So that music below their speech and whatever else for their podcast, that was the noise floor, because you couldn't get any quieter than that. You couldn't get more silence than the music would allow. Noise floors can be all kinds of different things. It can be traffic. It can be a lawnmower outside. In my example of their old recording that I played you with the microphones out of phase with the guy doing the Little Shop of Horrors dialogue, the noise floor was someone practicing music in the next room, someone practicing xylophone or something, it sounded like.
Yep.
Okay, so I am right in thinking of that as a noise floor, because I was surprised to find out it's actually been in all the podcasts. It's just the first time I heard it, which is probably a compliment to the three instructors.
Nice.
I have no musical ear, and I'm like, hey, I hear something, and I thought, well, I'll email them and ask them about it, and they said, yeah, it's actually in every podcast. You probably won't hear it without headphones. And so, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, the noise floor, as he said, it can be either electronic or acoustic. So right now, actually, because my window's open and things, you probably might be able to actually hear that I have a noise floor. Plus, I'm on this microphone. But the other day, I, you know, demonstrated, and so did Derek, another type of noise floor, which is what happens when, like, an XLR, you know, connection, is open and there's nothing plugged up to it. Yeah, that. Ow. Yeah, that.
That was a very high noise floor. Any other questions? Okay, well, thanks ever so much, everyone, for coming. I do apologize for the technical difficulties that I had today, because my computer kept updating and whatnot. It was rather last minute, the re-preparation that I had to do. But I hope everything came across okay, and that it was a reasonably smooth learning experience. And as ever, if you have any questions, either ask them right now, or on the audio list, or in a future study group.
Yeah, no problem, Adam. Glad you enjoyed the lesson. And yeah, thanks everyone for coming.